You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Moretzky with the program that puts his money where his fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Television Network. The countdown to Super Bowl 52 is on. Let's do this thing. All right, Steve Merrill's going to join us as he does every Monday on the program. Chris Meaney's going to join me in studio. A lot of stuff to get to with Chris Meaney. Of course, Chris Meaney is a diehard Philadelphia Eagle fan. We had the NHL All-Star Game yesterday. The playoff chase begins for real when they return tomorrow night in the National Hockey League. We had the Pro Bowl yesterday. We've got baseball. Baseball been very good to me. Baseball, baby. Baseball pitchers and catchers reporting pretty soon, man. I think it's, what, about 30 days or whatever the hell it is? A little over, if that, whatever. Where are we with that, actually? I don't know. We'll have to check the calendar. I saw it was 43 days a couple of weeks ago. But, man, we're already into, don't pitchers and catchers report like mid-February? I don't know, whatever. Baseball's around the corner, all right? We're so focused in on this Super Bowl right now. And actually, that's a lie. I'm actually focused in on the basketball games tonight. We've got some interesting college basketball games on the board, and I've got to pick some winners, man. Rent day's in like 3 days. We've got a horse that hasn't run in like 5 months. I got a lot of problems. And I just lost a bet on Olympiakos. Olympiakos and Panathinaikos or whatever the hell it is. You know, that big Greek rivalry. It's not just for soccer, basketball as well, of course. Just happened like a minute before the show started. I had them plus 6.5. They lost 68-61. That's seven! Doesn't matter. Like, you figure, the NBA, you get screwed. No, it doesn't matter, man. You'll get screwed. The Greek League, the Indonesian League, the Filipino League. God, I hate the Filipino League with a freaking passion, man. Like, God, I hate that D-League. Ugh. But anyways, see, I'm not even thinking about the Super Bowl. But I've got some Super Bowl notes. I've got some Super Bowl angles. The closer the game gets, I'm starting to like the Philadelphia Eagles more and more. As we are now just 6 days away from Super Bowl 52, and all the money's coming in on the Philadelphia Eagles right now, at least for the most part. The betting public in a consensus, 65% on the underdog. And I understand why. I totally get it. You know, even though is the number getting to be a little bit too low? Looks like Gronkowski's going to play, but I don't know. With Gronk, you never know. Is the number getting too low? It has been the year of the dog, literally and figuratively. You know, there's only been one cover in the entire playoffs as a favorite, and that was the New England Patriots against the Titans. And, it all depends on what you laid with that Viking and a Saint game, but essentially the underdogs are 9-1 against the spread, man, in this year's NFL playoffs. And it is fitting, because I know everyone knows this, and I know you watching at home know this right now, but of course, in Chinese astrology, this year it's the year of the dog. It is the year of the dog, so it's fitting, right? 9-1 underdogs? Not so fast. As I fell for this crap a couple of years ago, and I believe in Chinese astrology. The Asians are the smartest people, all right? Yeah. And especially when I lived in Vegas, I bought into, like, all these superstitions and started to kill me. No $50 bills. I never knew that before about $50 bills. $50 bills are bad luck. So... in Vegas, it's funny. Nobody wants, the diehard gamblers and stuff, nobody wants a $50 bill. So, like, I've been at cages before where they offer me a 50 and stuff, and I'm like, just don't pass that, like, voodoo bill off on me. And they're like, come on, man. Yeah, really? Like, the guys are like, really? You too? I'm like, yeah, me too. No 50. I don't want any of your 50s. All right? I don't know. The Chinese civilization has been around for a long time, and that wall they built is pretty good. I've got faith. They say 50s are bad luck. 50s are bad luck, man. Hey, Chris Webber wears number 4. The son of a bitch called a timeout. 4. Very bad luck. Very bad. Very bad. So, yeah, so it was the year of the horse a couple of years ago. It was about 3-4 years ago. It was the year of the horse. And I thought it was a great sign. Because, the Denver Broncos were in the Super Bowl, and Peyton Manning looks like a horse. So I was like, man, the guy looks like a horse. He is a horse. Like, if Peyton Manning was an animal, he'd be a horse. He's got a horse face. I was like, he's got a horse. He's a horse. The Broncos are horses, and it's a year of the horse. Didn't work out. It worked out until the first offensive play of the game when they snapped the ball over Peyton Manning's head and it went for a safety. Then I realized, yeah, this astrology isn't really going to have much of an impact on the game. But it is year of the dog. I just want to throw that out there right now. Now, if you're wondering, and I know you are, about the Madden simulator, what did the Madden simulator say? And I'll tell you what, the Madden simulator is pretty freaking accurate, man. It, you know, we don't have time to go over every score and stuff, but it's closer than it's not closer. We'll put it that way. And it really is a pretty good simulation because they have the updated stats and their player rankings are pretty accurate. As the Madden, you know, Madden creator stated, they're essentially the 33rd National Football League team. The NFL shares all their data with Madden. So, you know, Madden's predictions are pretty good. And for the record, Madden has this game going to overtime. A wild game. They say it's going to be like 3-0 after the first quarter, 14-10 at the half, and then it's going to explode and open up and go to overtime. Sort of what happened last year, actually. But remember, the New England Patriots have never scored a point with Tom Brady in the Super Bowl in the first quarter. We're going to be betting the first quarter under 9.5. So they've got the Patriots winning 36-30. Now, listen, this isn't gospel, but I'll tell you what. I do think that it is going to be a higher scoring game. Everybody's, oh, this and that. This game's going to go over. I'm starting to buy in. Now, listen, we're going to have our final picks and props and everything on Wednesday. All right, we're going to release it on Wednesday. We'll have a video up on Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page, and we'll come up with all the, you know, the stone cold Steve Austin locks that we can think that we can find. Now, there's, you know, basically the narrative about this Super Bowl is all about Nick Foles, and you know, Nick Foles versus Tom Brady. I don't know. You know, people are talking like Nick Foles basically has played in two games in his entire career, and he's going to be all, you know, his knees are going to be rattling, and he's not going to be able to talk and function, and oh my God, how's Nick Foles going to handle the Super Bowl? You know, Nick Foles has started in 52 games in his career. That's a significant amount. You know, that's what? It's essentially, imagine Nick Foles' 52 games would be like over 3 years as a starter. You know how many games he's won out of the 52 games? 31 of them. 31 of them. He's 31-21 as a quarterback, a starting quarterback in the National Football League, including 11-11 on the road. All right, so Nick Foles, we, you know, we can go down, you know, Nick Foles completed 78% of his passes in the playoffs. After Tom Brady, oh yeah, who has the second best touchdown to interception ratio in the history of the National Football League? Nick Foles. You know, only two quarterbacks have ever completed 75% or more of their passes in both playoff games. Joe Montana, Nick Foles. So it's like Nick Foles has accomplished things, people. All right? The guy's been in the league. He's not a kid. He's been around. Started 52 games. All right? He was an athletic basketball player in high school. The Division I basketball teams offered him scholarships. You know, Nick Foles isn't coming in here. You know, we're not talking about Chad Henne starting the Super Bowl. All right? Now, you know, obviously, and, you know, there's going to be a lot of younger people that might not know Jeff Hostetler, but Jeff Hostetler was the quarterback for the New York Giants when they beat my Buffalo Bills in 1991. All right, the Norwood missed kick. And the similarities, and for the record, Jeff Hostetler is the only backup quarterback ever to win a Super Bowl. All right? I mean, there have been guys that haven't been. You know, I read a best backup quarterback ever to win a Super Bowl list. They had Tom Brady. Tom Brady wasn't a backup quarterback. Yeah, Tom Brady was a backup quarterback to Drew Bledsoe because Tom Brady was a freaking kid. You know, we're talking about guys that have been around their entire career and they're backups and they got thrust into the starting role to become the starter in the playoffs. There's only one other guy, Jeff Hostetler. And I'll tell you what, you look at Jeff Hostetler, the similarities are insane. Jeff Hostetler took over for Phil Sims when the New York Giants were 11-3. Sims got hurt, 11-3. Hostetler took care of business in a regular season and then he lit it up in the playoffs and they won the Super Bowl. You know, the Eagles were 11-2, you know, when Wentz goes down. It's the exact same scenario, and I think we're going to have the same result in the end, actually. And, oh, yeah, what was the matchup when Jeff Hostetler came in? Well, it was the New York Giants versus the Buffalo Bills. What division? Oh, yeah, NFC East versus AFC East, another similarity. For the record, the AFC East has faced off against the NFC East 10 times, all right, in the Super Bowl. The NFC East is 8-2, but my Buffalo Bills, unfortunately, we're the reason for this. It's 8-2, but we're the reason. We lost to the Dallas Cowboys twice, to the New York Giants once, and the freaking Washington Redskins once. They all piss me off. But the Redskins and the Giants games anger me the most out of them all. But one thing is, listen, is history going to repeat itself all the time? No, but those who don't learn from history are doomed to repeat it. And in a year of a dog, and then the dogs keep barking, I don't see any reason why the Philadelphia Eagles don't take this game down to the wire and then actually get it done. Push the Patriots off the cliff, man. The Patriots like to live dangerously. They skate on thin ice, but they never freaking fall through. I think LeGarrette Blount's going to push them through. I think the Philadelphia Eagles can get it done, but we'll lock in our final predictions, picks, props, and everything else in between on Wednesday. What do you think? Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. As I alluded to off the top of the program, Chris Meany will join us in studio. We got a ton of stuff to talk about with Chris Meany. NHL All-Star Game was yesterday. Unofficial second half of the NHL season. Season's actually flying by. Olympic hockey, they're dropping the puck shortly. But Chris, of course, big Philadelphia Eagle fan. And he's also a big Angel fan. I was going to call him the Anaheim Angels. They're the Anaheim Angels. He's a big Angel fan, but he was also an Expo fan as well. So he's a big Guerrero fan. And Chris is probably the one of the few people that's not really outraged by him going in as an Angel because he's an Angel. But it's funny, in the Dominican Republic, there's billboards all over the place in the Dominican Republic, and he's wearing an Expo uniform, just to let Angel fans know. But whatever, we'll get into that. We'll get into that. I got a lot of thoughts on Vladimir Guerrero Hall of Fame stuff. With Chris Meany, let's bring in Steve Merrill right now. Countdown Super Bowl 52 is on. You know, last week is kind of tough. We went through a lot of props and stuff like that. But now it gets real. The game is just 6 days away. Steve Merrill joins us. What's up, Steve?
You know, I've been meaning to ask you, Gabe. I don't dig into hockey as much as I used to. But what is the deal? I saw they're not taking time off for the Olympics this year. So what's going on with the Olympic teams?
The Olympic teams are minor leaguers and like university players. So
from any of the none of the NHL guys are going to any countries?
No.
Well,
no. The NHL commissioner, the NHL players wanted to. So like it's not on them. So when people are, oh, you son of a bitches, you didn't go. They wanted to, but they lost the battle with the owners. The owners basically they don't like it. Yeah, you know,
I don't blame them. It's a problem.
They shut their league down for 2.5 weeks. It's every year someone has gotten hurt in the Olympics.
Yeah,
like a major player, like a star player, has gotten hurt. You know, it's the old debate, Steve. And times have changed. I mean, before it was country first, right? You know, it would be unheard of. Like, shut the hell up. Like in soccer and in international soccer and stuff. They don't care. They'll pluck your ass, man. Doesn't matter. You play for Manchester United in the biggest game. Hey, we're playing Bolivia, and you're on Brazil first, kid. You're not on like Man U first. Like that's the way that works. But we live in a new era right now, Steve, of selfishness. You know, the millennial generation that basically, well, why would they play? And it's not without any money, and who cares? And you know what I mean? It's we're. People talk about patriotism, but it's fake patriotism, Steve, you know? So in the end, the NHL players lost the battle, and it'll be minor league players. So, like, the U.S. has guys from, like, the AHL. So imagine, like, if it was baseball, AAA, or, like, the D-League. There's a couple of kids. For the most part, Team Canada is all guys that were already in the NHL. You know, that are sort of, you know, guys that retired a couple of years ago, not star players. So it's not the top of the top. But I said it last week, Steve. What's the most famous, like one of the most biggest sports stories in sports history?
Amateurs beating pros in the Russia game. Yeah.
Exactly. And the biggest Olympic ice hockey and one of the biggest moments in American sports history and hockey history and Olympic history was the Miracle on Ice. Yeah, and those are NCAA kids and guys that really weren't good enough to be in the NHL, beating the best of the best.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, and yeah, it's definitely not on the players. I'm glad they wanted to play, but I don't blame the owners one bit. It's a business, and I mean, it does definitely disrupts their multi-million-dollar business having these guys play. And it's not like the Olympics have always been professionals. The Olympics, as you know, for the first 90% of the Olympics were amateurs. So as long as it's a level playing field, in fact, this is better than 1980 because the Russians basically had all NHL players in the Soviet Union that couldn't come out against amateurs. If it's a level playing field, you know, I think it's fine, and the Olympics really should be amateurs. In fact, you know, I have mixed feelings with, like, the NBA guys because at least it's a little more level competition now. But when the Dream Team came out in 92, it was kind of a mockery. I mean, it was
stupid.
You know, let's see if they can win by 50 every game.
Yeah, I remember. They beat Angola by 72. It was like, good for you. You know what I mean? Thing is, the U.S. is the one that started all this. You're exactly right. They didn't like losing. They lost the gold medal a couple of times in basketball with the college kids there. And, you know, they were good teams. You had, like, NCAA superstars. But they were playing against men from Greece and Argentina, and they were losing, and it pissed them off. And they're like, all right, let's bring it in. I agree with you. I mean, the Olympics, not supposed to be professional. That's you know, it's the Olympics.
Yeah, I think it might be a better thing, and it definitely is better for the NHL.
But you know what it was, Steve? It came down to, and it wasn't about that, too. It's just garbage. When the Olympics were in Salt Lake City, the NHL was there, Steve. When they were in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, they were there. All right?
Yeah, that's true.
They're sort of handpicking the NHL. We don't want to go to South Korea because of the North Korea stuff. They're scared that, you know, that Kim Jong-un's going to launch a missile at them. And, you know, the political stuff and the real, let's get to the kicker here, Steve. It's all about money. And it really came, it was like a pissing contest, basically. The International, you know, the Olympic Ice Hockey Committee, International Hockey Committee, basically said, why should we pay your insurance? We're, you know, we're the Olympics, not our problem. And it's a lot of insurance, Steve. You know, can you imagine? You've got guys like Sidney Crosby, man. These guys have $100 million contracts. So even if they're going to play for free, they have to be insured. It has to be. And we're talking about massive, like, you know. So the NHL sort of scoffed, and they said, we paid the insurance last time. We're not doing it this time. And then we get to the real kicker, Steve. The games would be on at like 4 a.m.
Yeah, that's another huge problem. That's very. I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
But I mean, obviously, when it's in Canada and the U.S., it's hard not.
So
to
So if you're the NHL, talking. You're like, we're shutting our league down to put games on at 4 a.m. and worry about Kim Jong Un dropping a bomb on us. You know what I mean?
Yeah, those are two things I didn't think about. I mean, the whole political thing plus the time element. Yeah, and it's not like it's a major NHL country, so yeah, I can understand. I don't blame the owners. I would have been against it if I was an owner, so I have no problem with it.
You know, it's funny. Your team actually, the Capitals, with Ovechkin. Because Ovechkin's a big patriot, right? I mean, he's a very proud Russian.
Right.
He called their bluff at first. He said, I don't care. Like, if you guys, whatever. He said, I'm going. And tough. You know what I mean? He said, if you want to release me, sue me, whatever.
Exactly.
But, you know, and what are they going to do? Release him?
Exactly.
Yeah. Like, and it was pretty ballsy of him. He said, what do you, you know, I'm going. And whatever you want to do, you do. But I'll be back in 2 weeks type thing. But they got to him. Yeah, they got to him. They basically, the NHL played hardball, Steve. Like, the league, they basically said, we're going to withhold contracts, and we're going to sue you for back pay and your violation of your contract. And it was, you know, they got legal on everyone. And no NHL player wants to handle that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a smart way to handle it because these guys would probably eat a little bit of loss of salary because he makes so much, but they don't want to deal with the legality issues.
Exactly.
That was the thing. I'll give the NHL credit. I think they handled it right, to be honest.
That was the thing because a few NHL players said, what are they going to do? What are they going to do? Like, I'm going to come back and they're going to say, no, you don't want me, even though I'm a great player. You're going to trade me? What are you going to do? But what they did is, like you said, they went to the lawyers and they said, oh, no, these guys would be in violation of their contract. And you could, like, sue them for back pay, and they got nasty. Sort of like, remember when Ricky Williams said, like,
yep.
I'm smoking weed, I quit. Screw you, I'm out. And then their only recourse was like, all right, we're going to sue you for the signing bonus we gave you. You know, that was their only recourse, and it worked. You know, the judges decided, yeah, you sort of are under an obligation to them. So then he played against his will. Like, it was kind of stupid. The Dolphins did it. Remember, he came back. He wasn't happy. He was like, whatever. All right, I'll play. Sort of like Prince, Steve. Before Prince died, like, he got into a real bad feud with a record company. And they were like, you owe us a record. So he went into his garage, and he made noise. He basically, like, threw things against the wall.
Yeah, the lesson there is that sometimes you win, you don't really win. Like the record company or the Dolphins would have been better off kind of hedging reaching a compromise, getting something back and letting them walk because they're getting nothing on the field.
Yeah, and the record company after, like, you can't give us this. And he was like, what, now you're telling me what my music is artistically? He goes, no, that's the record. You know what I mean? That's the music. That's the record. You wanted 40 minutes of noise? I gave you 40 minutes of noise. You're right. And they never released it. You're right, Steve. Like, they would have been better off. All right, Prince, everyone settle down here. All right, so line movement to 4.5. I don't know. Like you said, I mean, I haven't spoken to one. Everyone loves the I'm not going to say everyone, but like 80%, let's say, of the people like the Eagles, it seems.
Yeah, I don't. It might be 100% in my world. And these are most, you know, like not even recreational bettors. These are just public football fans I've talked to over the past week. But you know how I love public consensus, and there's no bigger public sporting event on earth than the Super Bowl. And there's no question the public is on the Eagles. The early money was as well. That's mostly sharp money. I mean, you know, 90% of the public's not going to play till Friday, Saturday, and Sunday this week. So this line could come down further to 4. And I think one of the reasons the sharps got in early is if they liked the Eagles, they knew the line was going to go down. And if they didn't like the Eagles, they might be trying to hedge back on New England at 4 or even 3.5 this weekend. So I think it'll come down to 4, and then it'll start going back up with a buyback on Sunday.
Yeah, you're right. So, you know, with the Gronkowski stuff, it's interesting because Gronk practiced, and they're like, "Oh, he's practicing. It's looking good." And then the number came down. Still, I'm questioning this, Steve. I don't think Gronkowski is in good shape right now. I think the concussion, he got really, really smoked. And as they stated, if the Super Bowl was yesterday, he doesn't play. So, if you can't play now, yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, I mean, it's not like they're going to get some doctor that's going to say, I absolutely oppose this, right?
Exactly.
They're going to push him out there. I'm not disputing this. But I'm just thinking, Steve, if your brain isn't – if they're like, you couldn't play right now, they don't even want him facing white lights and stuff. And what? So in 6 days, it's just magically going to heal, Steve? And then what happens when he gets hit again? Like, the brain, man, it's not good. Like, he's taken a lot of damage, this guy, over the years. This is a serious thing that he has. I know he's going to suck it up because it's a Super Bowl, but the guy's messing with his life here a bit, Steve. I really believe that he's got a severe concussion issue.
Yeah, and I think the way you saw him react when he got hit in that game against Jacksonville, you could tell he wasn't normal, and you don't heal in 2 weeks with that.
No, like, if you're a UFC fighter, Steve, and you get freaking knocked out and you got a concussion, you're not allowed to fight for 3-4 months. It's as simple as that. They're like, you're out for 180 days. You know what I mean? That's the way it works.
Yeah, and there's no question. I think he will play. The point you bring up, which is right, is, you know, how effective will he be? Because he could get popped again. He probably isn't going to be 100%. So, yes, he plays, but that's not necessarily saying he's going to be any good. And he's a key player. Now, of course, they played last year without him. They were down 28-3. Yep. They still came back and won. Where I think it gets interesting, Gabe, is the MVP odds. And we touched on this last week.
Yeah.
Gronk is around 10-1, and he's the one guy I could see winning it other than Brady, because if he heads 2 or 3 catches, miraculously comes back from this concussion. But I don't think he's going to be healthy enough to play that well. So there again, you know, it really makes you like Brady and the MVP odds that the Patriots win.
And you know the thing is, too, with Gronk is, yeah, you're practicing or you're there. There's no way in hell he's getting hit. You know, there's no way, right? So when he's on the field in the Super Bowl, that's going to be the first time he's gotten hit since the real hit.
Right.
And like, maybe he's getting jarred a little bit because they have to, you know, just to sort of test it out. But it's not like, oh, yeah, hit me in the head to see how I feel. You know what I'm saying?
No, he's one shot away from not playing the
exactly.
Rest of the game.
Like, yeah, he goes in there, he gets clocked, it's over, right? But it doesn't kill them. They're used to it. He's been in and out of the lineup a lot over the years. So where are you leaning now, Steve? And we'll get your thoughts later in the week. We'll get a couple of props and your pick. But where are you leaning right now? I haven't made my final pick, but I'm liking Philadelphia. I really do think they can win this game outright.
And yeah, I mean, last week when it was 5.5, I looked at it. I was like, at 5.5, you know, if you take the names and the public out of it, I would like Philly. But like I said, I'm trying to find a reason not to like them because everybody and their brother is on board. But they've been the better team in the playoffs. The one reason I think you can make a case for New England, and the one thing I think could play out here where the public is wrong, like we often see, and we get that double-digit win, although, you know, New England never does that, is Nick Foles having a bad game. He's been fantastic in his 2 playoff games at home, especially last week. I mean, he had almost a perfect quarterback rating against Minnesota, the best pass defense in the NFC, and he's been solid in 3 of his overall 4 starts this year. But all of those games were at home, you know, and the one was against the Giants. They're not very good, the 2 home playoff games. I could see him regressing now on the road, neutral site, biggest stage ever with a week off. And you don't see Tom Brady necessarily having a fall off. So I think that's where you could see the Patriots winning it. But otherwise, it's hard not to make a case for Philly getting points.
You know, Steve, I brought it up earlier off the intro of the show. Nick Foles started in 52 games in his career. It's quite a, you know, it's a significant chunk. He's 32-21. 32-21 as a starter, 11-11 on the road as well. It's not bad. 500 record on the road. All right, Steve, so let's talk some basketball. We've got a couple of minutes here. Notre Dame and Duke. What was it? Was it 1973 that Duke and North Carolina hadn't lost on the same day on?
Yeah, it was 45 years. So I guess that's the would have been 73. I guess.
Yeah, 1973. That's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, 45 years, and it was 1995 that Virginia last beat Duke at Duke, and none of the players on Virginia were alive yet at that time.
Wow.
And that happened this past Saturday. Virginia 3.5-point dog. And it's crazy. Look at the future odds. Duke is like 5-1 favorite in most sports books. And then it's Michigan State and Villanova with them. And everyone else, including Virginia, is like in the double-digit range. Yet Virginia was only a 3.5-point dog, which means they would have been a slight favorite on a neutral court because Cameron's worth 4 to 5 points. And they beat them. So it just shows how skewed the future odds are still. Virginia continues to play well. And Notre Dame likes to slow things down just like Virginia did. So, you know, Duke could have some trouble. The problem is Notre Dame did not look good against Tech. I had a play on them, even with the injuries with Farrell out. Their other leading scorer's been out for a couple of weeks as well. I thought they could slow them down still. I just don't know if they have enough healthy manpower right now to compete with Duke.
Yeah, they're really beat up. That's the thing. But it is 14. I'm leaning with the over still, Steve. I think it could still get there. I think Duke is going to find life a little easier to shoot the basketball against Notre Dame than they did against Virginia, and I completely agree with you. Look, basically, it's the same teams every year, Steve. Like, the odds makers, you know, I think the public bets on name, right? Like, is Arizona. Arizona's not a better basketball team than Virginia is. They're not, and they're 11-1. Why? You know, because, oh, it's Arizona. And, like, Michigan State, come on. You know, Villanova, to me, I think Villanova is the best team. But I think there's great value of Virginia, 25-1. Another team, Kansas, 12-1. I like this Kansas team. They're coming together. Good road team, Steve. Big game tonight against Kansas State. You know, they're 55-5 straight up the last 60 times they played.
Yeah, and Kansas State blew a lead at Oklahoma and then won at home. This is now their Kansas, meanwhile, blew that lead. This is their third road game in the last five games overall. So it doesn't look like a great spot for a road favorite. I had Texas a few weeks ago in late December as a home dog. Definitely should have gotten the cover there. And Kansas found a way to misleadingly win by a few points more than the spread. So, you know, it's always leery playing against them here in a short price range. But I think Kansas State is a definite live home dog in this game.
All right. Steve Merrill, ProSportsInfo.com, one of the coverage experts. Thanks for taking the time to be with us, Steve.
Thanks, Gabe.
And there's Steve Merrill with us. Take a quick break. Chris Meany will join us in studio. Super Bowl 52. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. Let's welcome Chris Meany into the studio. Big week, Chris. Big week.
Big week, man. I'm not going to sleep at all this week.
How old were you? Have you been a lifelong Eagle fan?
I have been a lifelong Eagle fan.
So you were an Eagle fan. You watched the Super Bowl last time you were in it?
Yeah, in 04. I remember.
How old
were you? I was in college. So
college.
I was 19, 20.
Oh, so that's, that's.
Yeah,
that's
I watched with a Pats fan, too. And
that's
like,
a full memory then, yeah.
Yeah, he chirped me the entire first half. And then if you remember the game, like, Eagles were starting to make a push. Like, they made a push in the fourth quarter. And they got right back into the game, and I thought I was going to get my revenge on him, but I
they covered the spread at least.
Yeah, they covered the spread. It was a tight game, and they were showing the highlights again this morning on NFL Network. Just some old clips, and Donovan McNabb, just all the brutal throws that he made in that game. A couple bad interceptions.
So line movement, money's coming in on the Eagles. If you notice, I don't know, does it concern you that pretty much everybody out there likes the Eagles in this game?
See, I just feel like people love the underdog story, but I just feel also that they just hate the Patriots, man.
Yeah.
I feel like that's what it is. Like, you either love the Patriots or you hate them. And you have the few NFC East fans that are like, okay, well, fine, I'll go for New England because, you know, I don't want to see the Eagles win. I've already seen New England win. That's the talk that around here in the office and that I'm hearing from a lot of people. Patriots.
Yeah, the Patriots have already won so many times.
They've already won so many damn times. They don't mind seeing them win again. So I get it, the line movement a little bit. I'm on the side of the Eagles covering those points and this being like a field goal game, but it's hard for me to sit here and pick them straight up without sounding like bit of an ass. Let's
all right,
be
so let's get into. I'll give you some backing and some reason why. Yeah. New England 31st in opponents' yards per rush. They give up 4.6 yards per clip. Philadelphia 3.8.
Yeah,
it's a decided advantage right there. Running the ball, stopping the ball. They're very even on offense. Patriots average 5.9 yards per play. Eagles 5.5 yards per play. Both the Patriots and the Eagles are both ranked in the top five in points allowed per game. This is one thing with the Patriots that is deceptive. Because if you look at, they're the 30th rank. And people are like, settle down. It's not like they give up 80 points a week here. All right.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. They give up yards. They've always been that sort of elastic,
struggled at the start. Big time.
Yeah, and that's what skewed their numbers.
Yeah, at the beginning of the year.
Over the last 11 games of the year, Chris, they only gave up 14 points per game.
I know.
And when you add it all up, look, Philadelphia Eagles gave up 18.4 points per game. New England gave up 18.5.
Yeah. These teams are very similar, though.
They're as evenly matched as you can get. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, we go down the list. Patriots have averaged 32.6 points per game in their last five playoff games. The over's 4-1. I do think it's going to get there, Chris, at 48. I'm starting to like the over as this game approaches. I know I'm it's the Super Bowl and the defense. It's the NFL. It's going to open up. It's going to.
Yeah, I can see, and I was just talking to the old man cameraman Drew out there, and I was just telling him like a 28-24 kind of feel. That's kind of what I have, and that would be enough to hit the over on there. They're very similar, and I know you and I have been interactive with this game and certainly on Twitter as well and talking about the record. And the record inside the division and the point differential. Go look at the point differential. It's the exact same point differential. One more point four, one less point. It's like they're so close. A lot of those numbers
Eagles,
I want to throw out
look,
from
last
the Philly
week,
side, though, because it's a lot of that was with Carson Wentz. A lot of those yards per attempt.
You can't, but.
It's tough.
But even last week, really, the Minnesota Vikings and Eagles were as evenly matched as possible. They were both 14-3. They were both 11-6 against the spread. They were both 8-9 with the totals.
Yeah.
It was like bang, bang, bang. And, you know, handling the big moment, sports is a matchup of wills, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who can break each other's will? Who can impose each other's game plan? The Philadelphia Eagles are a pretty mentally resilient team. And, you know, hearkening back, actually, to when Carson Wentz got hurt against the Rams. And I remember I tweeted it at the time. I said, look at the bench. They weren't like,
yeah.
You know, even though like they were going to win the game, sometimes like star players hurt and it's almost like someone died, right? It's like,
right.
Yeah, we won. But like the Eagle players, I remember, they were all like dancing. And
because that was
and
a huge,
laughing.
Yeah, it was a huge win for them. And they were looking at the big
picture.
Yeah,
and I even remember the next day, I think it was Fletcher Cox said, we're not a one-man team.
Yeah.
He said, Carson Wentz, best quarterback. He had his back, best quarterback in the league, but we're a team.
Right.
Because we're not a one-man team.
Yeah.
And we'll be fine. And it was that attitude. They never really hung their head. Oh, no. And, you know, how's Nick Foles going to do? It was really, no, next man up.
It is. And that's the mentality. And sometimes it's a cliche to talk about those things. But that's what a lot of them have said in the dressing room when they lost Jason Peterson. Or Peters.
Yeah.
They lost arguably the best offensive lineman in the game. They lost him. They lost Darren Sproles early in the year.
Yep.
They lost Darby. They traded for a corner who's their best corner at
the
time. They
draft Pumphrey, get nothing from him.
They get nothing from him. So, and then you look at Howie Roseman, and he brings in all these pieces. Chris Long, chip on his shoulder, Blunt. Nobody wants him. He scored 18 touchdowns. Nobody wants him. He can only do that with the Patriots. Robinson. They bring in Alshon Jeffrey. He bets on himself for a one-year deal. Torrey Smith, he bring in him a one-year deal. Well, look at what happened against Minnesota. Every touchdown and every defensive play was guys that Roseman brought in. Think about it. Jeffrey, touchdown. Two of them. Torrey Smith, touchdown. Chris Long, forced fumble. Robertson, got the pick six. Chris Long forced that. Everything was just guys that Howie Roseman brought in and that whole team aspect. It's a real actual special story.
The GM's done a hell
with a lot
of
these players. Yeah, he was named, you know,
I've been talking about it too.
He's brought in a lot of these guys.
The entire team has that chip on their shoulder.
Yeah.
You have a bunch of guys that weren't wanted.
Ajayi.
Were mocked. Yeah.
Ajayi is another example.
Let go.
You bring in Ajayi. This guy doesn't, they didn't even want him in
Miami. Jim Schwartz.
Look at Schwartz.
Jim Schwartz been a head coach.
Yeah.
And guy goes 9-7, takes teams to playoffs, and they act like he was 2-14. Oh, Jim Schwartz can't coach. He'll never be a head coach. Frank Reich, career backup quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Can't get that head coaching job.
And look at the other guy that Rosen brought in, Foles.
Yeah.
Another guy with Peterson. And Foles said to himself, he said the other day after that game, he wanted to give some credit to Doug Peterson in the play calling. We talked about it with Reich and Peterson. He said, There was one person that came to watch me in person in college. Who was it? Doug Peterson. The only guy. The only guy to go see him. And they were with him in Philadelphia. They wanted to bring him along in Kansas City when he wanted to just retire because it was just a mess with Fisher and company with the Rams. He was cut on national TV.
Yeah.
He just wanted to retire. Went over to KC, won a couple games. It's the system. And this is the reason I think Philadelphia will stay in this ball game. They're unlike other teams where Jacksonville played scared. They didn't want to have Bortles take all these shots. Atlanta in the Super Bowl looked like they weren't, you know, the play calling was Doug Peterson is not afraid to take gambles and risks. Nobody's taken more shots on fourth down than
him. Getting to the Super Bowl already in this without Carson Wentz.
Yeah, and look at this. The first play of the game against Atlanta, what happened? Foles aired it out downfield, and they got a PI call out of it. The second play against Minnesota, aired it out downfield. It was dropped by Torrey Smith. He's not afraid to take shots. He's not afraid to take gambles and risks. That's why I feel like there's just a different feel between this team and the other teams that have let the Patriots back into it. I think this is going to be a really, really tight ball game, and it just these two teams, like you said, you're rattling off some numbers, very, very similar. It's just at the end of the day, you have the GOAT, you have Tom Brady, and you just there's really not much else to say besides he holds basically every single record, Super Bowl record, and besides a rushing touchdown, this is the only thing Gabe that he hasn't done in the Super Bowl is run one in. It's unreal.
You know, I saw a stat actually. You know, he's like I think he's 279 yards away from 10,000 yards passing in the playoffs.
In the playoffs. It's
like it's like
crazy.
Yeah, it's like one of those like what?
Yeah.
He's played in I think he's played in this is going to be his 39th playoff game. Like, you know, what can you say, you know, 15% of all Super Bowls, right?
Yeah.
He's what do we got here left here? I wanted to get this stat up, but I remember it actually. I wanted to just confirm it. Speaking of it's interesting you bring this up. Because what's the first play they're going to be? First play, a pass or a run?
So if I think pass on both sides.
Because, no,
think.
The perception is if it's the Eagles, they're going to run on the first thing. But you just brought it up.
And you can go back to it. The first play against the Giants, a deep ball to Aguilar. And the first play on Christmas against Oklahoma was a deep ball as well. Peterson's not afraid to take these shots. And I was a little bit surprised watching that game against Atlanta. And all the talk was, okay, well, Nick Foles, like, yeah, he's a good quarterback, but he can't throw the ball downfield. Well, Gabe, you go back to that 2013 season, he had the best passer rating on deep balls thrown in the entire NFL. He had the highest yards per attempt over Aaron Rodgers. It was 9.3, the 27 touchdowns. Like, he can actually air it out, and they have guys to go down the field and to get it. They're not afraid to take long shots. So I don't know what that prop is, and I know you're going to have a lot of props this week, but it's one that will probably be one of my favorite ones.
It's 8 Super Bowls in a row that a team has –
Has what, run?
Sorry, 7 out of the last 8, so 7 in a row that they've thrown.
And they've thrown. And, you,
and the run is the favorite, so you get the pass at plus 120.
Yeah, and if you look at New England, they've thrown the ball a lot lately.
I know, but
in their two games.
I think Brady draws back, does a quick hit with the first pass.
Yeah,
and it's interesting you just stated that the Eagles go deep. They try to come out and set the tempo.
They're not. They're like I said. They're not. They're not afraid to push the pace and to call their own shots. Nobody's went for it more on fourth down than them over the past 2 years. And Peterson is this is 2 years as an NFL coach. And they have the best success rate on fourth down as well. So they'll take some shots. They won't be afraid to throw the ball. It's not going to be like Bortles. We're going to hand it off every time. It's not going to be like that.
I like Donnie Wrightside. Donnie Wrightside was on the program last week. He's a big Eagle fan. And he's like, I believe in conspiracy theory, so I will bet that the Eagles have more penalties than the Patriots.
Yeah. Well, that can sometimes get in their way, the Eagles.
You know what, though? Yeah, I know, but...
And then you got the refs.
Listen, the refs did screw the Jags over last week, but they're not going to screw the... They got what they wanted.
Yeah,
they don't
they're
care.
In the game.
Yeah, they just couldn't have the Jags in the Super Bowl. Now, whatever happens, happens. And Sterator, both the Eagles... I think the Eagles are 10-3 with Sterator, and the Patriots are 12-5, so neither of them can really say, oh, Sterator always screws us. All right, we'll take a quick break. Prediction? It's the last time I'll speak to you, actually. So you'll have you'll be on later in the week. But what are you going with?
It kills me to say it, but yeah, I think it's a 28-24 game. New England wins.
Ooh.
Yeah, I think Philly will have the ball.
Yeah,
at the
but
end.
Look, this guy didn't have any confidence against
it's
the
true.
Falcons.
It's
he
true.
Didn't have any confidence
against
the Vikings.
It's true.
So it's worked for you.
It's true. I mean, I am very superstitious too, so maybe I'm just fooling you.
Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Renzi. We've got about 5 minutes or so here. Vladimir Guerrero inducted into the, well, the announcement. He's got inducted this summer, but the announcement that he's going to be a Hall of Famer. You know, I'm very happy for him, one of my all-time favorite players, but I can't lie. It was very disappointing to see him go in as an Angel. Yeah, I like him so much that I can't really hold it against him.
Right.
Like, I'm upset with the process. It is what it is. The Expos don't exist.
Right.
Right? So it's hard to get upset that somebody doesn't want to be a part of something that is really only in memory only. But I think it's, you know, to me, and I guarantee you, what do you think? Who's gonna have more fans there at Cooperstown when he's inducted? How many people are coming from California?
It's gonna be the Expos.
What, three, five, six?
It's gonna be the Expos.
And in all honesty, there might be 50, or there'll be a little pack of Angels fans.
But just a little pack.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm with you. I mean
are they gonna retire his number now? He's a Hall of Famer. I mean, are they?
They can ask Trout to change 27.
He's not even. No. You and I have talked about this. He's not even the most popular number 27.
Right.
And my deal with Vladdy is, and not to take anything, and I don't mean to take away from Angel fans, but he was just another mercenary in Anaheim.
Right.
Marino signed everybody.
Yeah.
He
everybody.
Threw money away. Yeah, you know what I mean? He signed everyone
to this day.
Yeah. It's not like people in Anaheim and LA love Vladimir Guerrero.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I'm an Angels fan because of Guerrero.
Yes.
Expos
so many
fan
Expos
at heart.
People. Listen, the Angels were always the Expos West. Bill Stoneman was their freaking GM forever.
Yeah, I mean, Guerrero's not the only one, Gabe. I mean, Bartolo Colon played there.
Orlando
Cabrera, Meister Astures played there. A lot of guys have played there. Guerrero, I mean, look at some of the numbers, too. And if you want to talk about, you know, MVP season with the Angels, fine. 2014, sure. I mean, that's when he first really started to get recognition, let's be honest. He played six full seasons with the Angels and seven full seasons with the Expos. He had five 30-home run seasons, two 40-home run seasons. He never had any 40-home run seasons with the Angels, and he only had three. He hit over 300 every single year with the Expos. He did not do that with the Angels. He had five 100 RBI seasons, five 100 run seasons, only four with the Angels, and only one 100 season. Only one 100 run season with the Angels. With that team and all the money that they spent on some of those guys. All of his seasons, not to mention he stole bases with the Expos. He didn't even do that with Anaheim at the time. So if you look from him and his standpoint, and you're looking at the numbers and you're comparing both, he's an Expo. His better numbers and better days were with the Expos, yet he won that. He got those playoff games.
And where's his heart? That you know what I mean? His
it
heart
should
is an
be
Expo.
With Montreal.
It is.
This
and it
guy
was.
Went there with like one shoe.
It is, and it was. His kids are born. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They, you know, they took him with one shoe. Exactly. They're the ones that
took the
that
chance
let
on
him. Be the wild swinger that he was, and all this type of stuff.
Yeah,
I mean, wild swinger on the in the box.
Right. Yeah.
wild swinger.
We both have seen him. A ball bounce to him, and he make contact with that.
But the thing is, it's sort of like the reality of it. Yeah, he's with the Expos, but the Angels made him rich.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And
the Angels made him rich, and the Expos were owned by Major League Baseball. He didn't like that. So, but you know, I'm happy for him. It's disappointing. And not to be petty, but I was considering going to Cooperstown, and now I'm not. Why would I go? I'm not, you know.
I would actually like to go, and I would wear Expos. I mean, I went to a Nationals game this summer, and I wore an
Expos.
Have
you ever been to Cooperstown?
No.
No.
But I hear that this ceremony itself is actually a good time, and I actually heard it from somebody in the office. I forget who it was, but he came in and said he goes every year, and he says.
Didn't Mikey used to go?
He was talking to us about that. Mikey and I were coming and hawing about maybe checking it out this time around. But yeah, I mean, I would be wearing the Expos. I went to Washington with an Expos jersey, and everyone was like, "Whoa! Like, where'd you get that?
Really?
That's so cool!" And there was a lot of Expos jerseys still in Washington, which is cool. They sell some Expos memorabilia in Washington.
Not cool.
Why not? You could wear some Expos stuff in Washington.
I'm not down with the Nationals, man.
I'm not either, but I'd rather wear Expos gear than the Nationals.
I used to really loathe the Nationals.
Yeah.
Like, I remember, they honored, Tim Raines one night.
Yeah.
I'm like, he's it wasn't not your player.
Yeah,
like, what,
right.
You know
I
what
that.
I mean? Like,
yeah,
he
I
never,
that.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
And Gary Carter, I was like, I was really like, you son of a bitches. Like,
I know.
You don't have nothing to do with Gary Carter.
I wish he would go.
Ryan Zimmerman broke the record.
Right.
They're like, oh, and he breaks Tim Wallach's record for a third baseman. I'm like,
No. No. You know what?
You know what would have been the best, though? Sorry, would have been the best if Vladimir Guerrero. I go in as Texas Ranger.
or Blue Jay. They didn't even give him any playing time here.
He shocks everyone and just puts the Ranger hat on.
I know.
And in the real deal, Rangers gave him the most money behind the scenes. What it comes down to, I totally get it. Artie Moreno's never had a Hall of Famer. The Angels embraced him. Moreno loves him. Yeah. They made him an ultra-rich man. And it's hard to sell baseballs at card shows, at conventions, in a city that doesn't have a baseball
team.
That's
the thing, yeah.
As a Major League Baseball Hall of Famer, he can make money now. That's the whole deal with this. Like a couple of $100,000 a year type of deal. Licensing, autographs, card shows. And there's just more card shows and memorabilia business going on in California than there is
exactly.
in Montreal
that's,
unless you're signing a puck.
That's the thing. It's all
you know,
money.
It's just
you're
it's
right.
reality. It's and he's gotta make money.
I know.
All right,
I hope he says something. I hope he says something about
will.
The Expos.
He
like,
will.
Like Pedro said it when he won the World Series, like I give some credit to the city of Montreal.
Not just that. I tweeted him. I tweeted him and I said, Vladdy, people are very upset. I said, you gotta go to Montreal.
Yeah.
Go to Montreal the day after the ceremony.
With the
jacket and the hat and everything. And, hey, guys, have a little rally in Montreal.
Yeah.
Throw him a bone and say, hey, I love you. I go on as an Angel, but you know what I mean?
I tweeted something very similar as a guy that I watched several times in Montreal.
Because people are pissed. Like people feel scorned. But we've got to get out of here. But how about the Milwaukee Brewers? The pitching's not great, but
good start. They got a good start to their lineup.
They
were right
only one game out of the playoffs last year.
Right. There's some talk maybe move Braun over to first base and they can get Santana in there. They got
he
a good
he would
outfield.
Play second now, too, I'm seeing.
Yeah, but I can't see him being able to do that physically. But first seems more likely. I mean, I don't think they're done. This is like a
– Oh, no, they're going to try to get
pitching.
They need pitching.
Darvish.
You don't do all this just to not get pitching.
Right, exactly. You don't spend all the money and make the trade. You trade your best prospect away. Yeah,
they're 25-1 to win the World Series. I'm not saying they're going to win the World Series, but I'm going to be betting on the Brewers win totals to the over. We'll come back with our plays of the day. What up, everybody? I am Gabriel Morenci, and a countdown to Super Bowl 52 is on. Let's try to build the bankroll leading into the big game. Let's start off in the association tonight. We got the Pacers. I think the Pacers can get it done on their home floor this evening against the Hornets. Yes, I'm aware they played last night. But the Pacers, they're pretty good at stopping the bleeding, and they're a damn good home team. Minnesota Timberwolves. I never do this, guys. You notice in my plays today, I never lay 5 or 6 points with a road favorite. But Atlanta have been covering some numbers recently at home, but I don't think it happens tonight. I think the T-Wolves go in there and win by 10, 12 points or so. The Miami Heat always freaking screw me. I always get burnt whenever I play with the Heat. But I like them in this spot tonight. We'll get the Heat to get it done here. I like the over 197. I like the college games better, right? Northwestern, Michigan over 132. Notre Dame and Duke over 147. And you know what? I know Notre Dame's really beat up, but let's take Notre Dame plus the 14 as well. Kansas Jayhawks, they're going to beat K-State tonight. I got the Rock Chalk Jayhawk over 147 as well. And Wisconsin are bad this year, but they beat teams up at home. They take frustrations out tonight, late a 4 with the Badgers. Other than that, you're on your own. May the winners be yours.